And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of What's on Draft. As you can tell, this is not the musically gifted voice of Mark Whittington. Mark's unfortunately not going to be able to join us today. We thought he went off the grid after the Nerlens Noel grand larceny, but he just made contact with us, so we know he's good now. So joining me today, of course, is Javier Pesqueta. Javier, how are you doing?
Oh, all good, man. Like I'm happy to have Nerlens on my team, so no problem here.
Oh yeah. So today we're going to go into mostly the five class here. So we're going to begin with Zach Collins, Jared Allen, guys that we haven't really touched on yet, and then move into kind of recalibrating our thoughts on Robert Williams, Justin Patton, Lauri Markkanen, and then we're going to finish up with some four talk. So TJ Leaf, Tyler Lydon, those guys, because we've pretty much been talking solely about the lead guards because that's been the strongest point of the class as well as the wings. So we're going to talk on the big class overall. So just to get us started, Javier, what are your general thoughts on this class of bigs?
Yeah, I was hitting it up in Twitter early on with a couple of my followers, like a couple guys that we all know in the community. And it was mainly about the question regarding like where is the value here, right? Like if you're thinking about drafting guys late on the lottery or even like late on the first, like you have to consider like if those guys are bringing or where the line is for where those guys are bringing more value than taking a bet on any of the wing players or even the guard players that are more gifted and that are more talented, right? Like most of these bigs, even the most productive ones or the ones that with the better archetypes, like they make me feel like more about like situational guys. Like I'm not really sold on any of those for being like a full on starter as a center for any competitive team. So that's my main focus here. Like identify those who have the better chance to be that type of profile and try to nab that guy before any or the other ones. Like that's why I think if we start talking with Zach Collins, I'm the highest on him of this whole bunch of guys. And it's pretty much because of that. Like as the guy I can talk myself into being that type of player. I don't know about you, Cole.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking on this podcast about valuing bigs. And currently there is a saturation of the market in the NBA. Yeah. So if you aren't like a special big prospect, which for me, I'm looking at category one guys, like I like to call them two-way playmakers. If you don't have that kind of self-creation or creation for others, positional size, or if you're not like a unicorn big, if you don't protect the rim and space the floor, like you're not going to be super valuable. Like we're talking about guys like Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, Kristaps Porzingis for the latter category. Like those guys are the special bigs. So if we're talking like valuing wings and lead guards over bigs right now, because the league favors perimeter play. Like you have to be like a special kind of big. And right now, like Javier noted, mostly these guys in this class are situational guys. Like you don't have those standout, like outlier athletes, even kind of with Giles not being who we thought he was going to be. Yeah. We don't have that high profile guy.
Yeah. And even if you have one, that could be probably Robert Williams. Like he's a guy that is even being played as the three most of the time by Texas A&M. Like they got their best perimeter guy in D.A. Hawk going down for the year. But before that, he was already playing some three. And I think coaches in the NBA, and you touched on this before, Cole, like some people are going to play him at the four. So you have to account for that. Like, you have to account for how the guy is going to be successful and in which setting. And if you're going to account for people playing him out of position or playing not in the ideal role, just because he doesn't have the ideal frame or what people are looking for at that spot, I will be higher on him if I know people are going to use him properly, but I'm not really like completely on it. I'm not really trusting people at the next level doing that. So I think kind of like that's one reason you can be lower on those guys. And like if we're talking mainly like about the big group, I think if the guy that comes closer to fulfill all those traits that we were talking about, like being able to protect the rim a little bit, being able to switch some, being able to shoot, even if the sample size is small, the free throw percentage is really good for him. And being able to like finish on the pick and roll, like he knows how to create the space, how to move off the ball. I think Zach Collins is the main headliner here. Like we haven't talked about him much. He's pretty much the sixth man for a really good Gonzaga team along with Silas Mason. And like they really play him at the four and at the five. Like they play him next to Karnowski, next to Jonathan Williams. And I think the main deal with him is like how advanced he is off ball and how good of a chemistry he has with Nigel Williams-Goss, their lead guard playmaker. and how much he can like leapfrog other guys and get to the rim. Like he's a really good finisher on those situations. And this is a similar trait served by other guys in this class. Like I will put them as specialists in the pick and roll that I have a certain degree of trouble translating defensively. And one of them is Zach Collins. The other one is Justin Patton from Creighton. And the other guy is an international guy, Anseis Pasekniesk from Gran Canaria, that is a Latvian from the same class as Porzingis. I would say those guys have some similarity offensively, but I don't know what you think about Collins in terms of like translating defensively. Like I think he's good verticality and in terms of like challenging guys, but I'm not 100% sure on his defense yet. Like that's my main problem with him right nowadays, I would say.
Yeah, I saw him against St. Mary's and I was pretty impressed. I haven't seen a ton of film on him, but what stuck out to me is that he tries really hard. Like he's unlike a lot of the bigs in this class. Like he fights like guys in the post. He's trying to deny post entries. He's really active. I liked his mobility. He moves backwards really well. Like he can retreat well, like in the stance. And that was kind of impressive to me, even though like he obviously gets like moved a lot because he's not like super strong. Like his frame isn't that adept yet, but you can expect that to improve. But yeah, like overall, like you said, he's kind of like Justin Patton-y inside as far as protecting the rim. He's not Robert Williams. He's not trying to block everything. He's not blocking everything, but he has some upside there. And offensively, like I just like the dual pick and roll, pick and pop kind of. He can do both. He can either roll or pop, which is really valuable. Like he's not Lowry as far as like shooting off screens.
No, of course not.
Yeah, and he's not like shooting off the dribble, but like in a pick and roll game, as a five, I actually really like him.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I mean, comparing him with Lowry, like, of course, Lowry has like more diversity to his jumper, but like, how useful, or I mean, it could be really useful, but like, how useful is that if you are not bringing the rest of the things to the table as a big, right? Like, if you are a big that can do everything that a big should do, like in terms of setting screens, in terms of defending the rim and stuff like that, and you as well can shoot, even if it's not as fluid or as versatile as a two guard, like Lowry's shot is, like, I think you can be really useful. And he likes to face up. Like, Collins is adept to doing that. He's adept even to put the ball on the floor sometimes. Like, I think he has a really nice package offensively. He hasn't passed the ball much, but I think they are using him much more as a finisher. Like, his usage is really high for a guy that young. And, like, I think that's a starting point with him. Like, he really is involved offensively with them. Like, he's a capital piece for them. I will think that he's probably their most talented guy long term. So that's like for the best team in the nation. Like they lost yesterday, so it's probably a bit of a overreaction here, like doing the podcast right after when they lost a game and they got like completely beat down by another five. But like, I haven't watched the game against by you, but like still, I think the offensive profile, like you said, is really enticing. And if he gets to develop the frame, I like his lower body. Like he's really long in terms of legs and all that. Like you can see with his frame, like he has like a shorter upper body in terms of that of size, and I would say like he can probably develop more strength later on. Like he's a really young guy, only 19. So like if you are trusting that and you think he can go a long way there, like probably that projected guy, like you can probably think about him as a capable defender somehow.
Yeah, and I really like differentiating him from Lowry again. He's more explosive finishing around the rim. He actually has some vertical pop. Yeah, and he's like his all his efficiency numbers is finishing as a post player are really good. Like he's really skilled. So I think with more of an optimal role at the five, if you put him more in a spread system, I haven't seen the handle like you have. My biggest issue with him that I haven't seen is the passing.
Yeah,
like I just. For sure. If he can pass, like he becomes really, really interesting to me just because he's so skilled. I think he can shoot it really effectively. He's got like his free throws, they look textbook. Yeah. Like, there's like no messing around with those. But yeah, I mean, if he adds physicality, if he can do big man things, he tries really hard. He sets good screens for the most part. It's just really, can he put on that extra mass and actually be trusted by coaches to anchor at the five? Because that's the biggest problem with like a Robert Williams to me is like, or coaches, like you said, are they going to trust Robert Williams to anchor your defense at the five when like he doesn't really do a lot of the intricate big man things like boxing out diligently,
like setting screens.
That too, he doesn't set any kind of screens.
No.
I was going to say
just like Collins in terms of like if you watch him play, like he really knows like he has to set a good screen to get like the space afterwards. Like he really has a good understanding of how that works, and that's impressive because a lot of these young bigs, they just want to roll to the ring whenever they have an opportunity. They don't even care about the screen. And they even sometimes it's useful to have that type of ability because you can just fake a screen and roll when the defense doesn't expect it. But when you really need to set the screen hard to get to create the space, sometimes those bigs don't want to do that, don't want to get physical. And Collins do that. Like for the most part, he's really working hard to get that extra space because he knows his team needs that. Like, Nigel Williams-Goss is a really good playmaker, but he's not the most explosive athlete in the world. Like, he doesn't have a lot of shake, so it's always useful to get that extra space for him to dive to the rim hard. And I think that's really impressive coming from a young guy like him.
What do you think the odds of him actually declaring are?
I don't think he's going to. Like, I will not put him there right now. It's just, like, so tricky now because since the guys can really, like, declare, test the waters and come back, like, for him, what's there to lose if he just does that, right? Like, he might get reports that he's going to be picked in the first round and that's good enough for him. Like, I'll probably try it if I were him. But I guess a lot of it has to do with how Gonzaga performs in the tournament, I would say. Like, that's probably a big part of how he thinks about it. And also, like, him and Tilly are probably going to be, I mean, Jonathan Williams, I guess, because he's only a junior, I think, when he transferred from Mizzou. But, like, him and Tilly are going to probably be the starters in this year. So I guess it depends how strong he feels about it. And also it depends, I would say, with Williams-Goss, right? Because he's only a junior as well. So he might stay for another year if he doesn't think he has a shot to be taken high enough. And if he stays, maybe he thinks that Collins, I mean, if his point guard stays, maybe he thinks he can put up bigger numbers and get pick even higher on. But this class of bigs is way deeper potentially than next year's. So I would probably advise him to declare, I would say. It's just a bit murky right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is definitely a guy to keep on your radar. I see him coming back for a second season at Gonzaga. Yeah. But what is ideal role at the next level for you?
Like, I would say the ideal role probably is like as an offensive big, like can actually do a lot of stuff. Like, I don't know about like with on ball, but off ball, he's probably the perfect guy for, like, you can put in a spread pick and roll, you can put in a pick and pop. You will probably like to put him next to an athletic guard that can operate and create a space for him. But also, like, if he keeps competing defensively, like, if he can switch a little bit, like, I think for an aggressive defense that actually can create opportunities to run the floor, that's a really good chance for him to develop. Like, I think I would like him as a, like, I'm not keen on making comparisons with the, like, players for the next level and stuff like that. But I would like him a lot, like, in the same venue the Hornets use Cody Seller, for example, but with a guy that can do a bit more offensively. Like, Seller can roll to the rim really well, but he doesn't pop at all. If you can get a guy that does all the things that Cody Seller does defensively for you and also can actually stretch the floor, like, if you can get that from a big, that's going to be a big plus for your team. So that, I think that's the ideal setting for him, but he probably has to develop a bit more, like you said, frame-wise, physicality, and also passing a little bit. That would be great to see.
Yeah, that's actually who I had written down, was Cody Zeller. It's a lazy, like, white-on-white comparison, really, but I get where you're going with rolling stuff. Napa
know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
Big Mo Quezon here. The new Smokehouse Pizza from Little Caesars is certified smokeified. 8-hour smoked brisket, certified beefified. 10-hour smoked pulled pork, certified hogified. Applewood smoked bacon, certified baconfied. And the Smokehouse seasoned crust and tangy barbecue sauce, certified smokeified. And what's better than three smoked meats on one pizza? This certifiable price. The new Smokehouse Pizza from Little Caesars is only $9.
Pizza, pizza.
At participating locations plus tax.
Let's transition into Jared Allen here. Just because he's another guy we haven't really touched on. I saw him a lot at the Hoop Summit and was really high on him based on in person. But I'm realizing now that was more comparatively to Marcus Bolden, because that's who he's playing against. Most of the time at the Hoop Summit, but he's a guy that really started the year slowly. He's been playing well, better of late, showing a lot offensively. My biggest issue with him is, can he guard in space? What about you?
Yeah, my biggest issue with him, like, I saw him a bit more with the USA in Chile, like last year in the competition they had with Marcus Fultz was there as well. And my biggest issue with him was like how like this like non-coordinated he was at times. Like, he looked lost in games, like in rotations and stuff like that. Like, not completely committed at times, like not really following the game. Like, I think that was my problem with him, like not completely fully on board defensively. Like, he's not a super intense guy, but like he has those athletic traits that you look for. Like, he's athletic, he can jump, he can move around. Like, he's a guy that is kind of like, when you look him move around and run the floor, like he's quite agile. Like, you see him run, like he's not a guy like has to use a lot of strides to get down the court. Like, I think that's that's really the pros. He has like the unreal length as well, right? Like that's part mm-hmm. of it. And I like him as a role guy as well, but like he's not as diverse. I thought he was a good passer when I saw him with USA basketball, but maybe that was a bit confusing. Like I know like Texas doesn't really use those type of settings with him, so it's difficult to see. And the problem with him early on is that he was not really producing statistically that much. Texas was kind of a mess with some people not playing yet, and like they were not really found in a groove with the new guys. Like I think Andrew Jones becoming a bigger part of the offense has been positive for Allen as well. And just like the main thing with him is like, is he going to be good enough defensively to warrant that he might not be all that diverse on offense, right? Because we know how useful it is to have a role guy, but like he's not really a guy that's going to pop as much as other prospects. And if he's not much of a passer either, like he's more of a one-dimensional guy on offense. And I don't really, like, I didn't like him much defensively in terms of, like, anchoring your defense, right? Like, that was my main problem with him. You think it's more about defending in space, right? Like, how he moves his feet in the pick and roll or how he can switch or not? Because you are more or less sold with him protecting the rim or not? Not really, not even that.
No, I think that's a great point. I'm not sold on him protecting the rim. I just think that, like, when you watch him, even going back to USA basketball over the summer, like, he really struggles in pick and roll containing. Like, his stance is kind of poor, and he's just not that quick. And he thinks he can, like, sink down and move, but he just gets blown by way too much. I think he has issues.
I think he trusts his lengths a bit too much. Like, I think he can, he kind of thinks he can recover whenever. And a lot of people that you watch early on when they are young, they tend to do that, and they adjust later. But, like, I don't really know. Like, for me, he seemed, like, a bit late in all of his rotations, or even, like, with these stances that you see a guy non-defending anybody, which is especially bad for a big because you are supposed to be anchoring the defense and at least being paying attention to the whole court. I think that's part of my issue with him, like how much he can do there. And also, it's true that Texas doesn't press as much as VCU did under Saka and all that. They don't even do that this year. But like, I thought he was going to have like, better numbers in terms of steals and all that if you put him at the top of a press or at the top of a defense, since he's so freaking long. Like he has a 6'7 or 6'6 wingspan, right? Like, it's something like that in that neighborhood.
Yeah, no, he's got really long arms. Like, I think it's like 7'5, 7'6. His block and steal numbers aren't great. Like, you'd expect more from him there. Yeah, I think the interior defense is definitely an issue. What I like about him, you touched on, is the mobility. I think he's underrated there. He's got huge hands. He's actually taken 58 jump shots in the half court this year, which is like 36 more than Zach Collins. Okay. So like he shoots a lot. He's not like super effective. He's 19 of 58, but he shows decent touch. I think he's more skilled maybe than he gets credit for. I'm with you on the passing. I don't know how real that is. I think he might have a little bit of vision. It's just maybe the decision-making that's the issue. Like he makes some bad reads out of the post when he gets doubled especially. And I think that can be improved. I think he has the intelligence to do that. It's just, like we talked about, if he's not going to be a substantial pop threat, he's going to be more of just a dive guy. The defense has to be there. And like, I don't see high level defense with him. Like we talked about, like mainly the perimeter. Like, I don't think he's going to be able to defend in space at the NBA level. I think he's going to get blown by way too often. And if he's not an elite rim protector, what do you really do with that?
Yeah, it's a little bit if you take a guy like just hopping on because we had the trade with DeMarcus Cousins and all that. Like, we saw Willie Cauley-Stein playing the other day and producing a lot offensively. But it's a bit like you take a Willie Cauley-Stein and you take off his unreal mobility in terms of like with his size. And you have a guy that can dive and can roll and can rebound the ball and can try to like protect the rim a little bit, but not really defend on pick and roll. So it's like, if you take that off, how valuable is that guy, right? Like, you have to trust Allen to be a bit more, at least on one end, to be able to be a starting caliber B, right? That's the thing. Not even Willie, with his like sometimes clueless mistakes, is a guy that is a head-on starter. So like that's part of it with me. And I think in a way, Jared Allen seems to be like a bit goofy as well. Like playing a little bit sometimes, like not in terms of like personality or anything like that, because we know Willie was a little bit of a funny character and stuff like that at UK. But it's more about like how he plays sometimes, like, not completely focus on games. Like, that's my main issue with him. Like, I don't see him, like, putting maximum effort all the time. Like, I don't see him, like I say, like, sometimes he's missing a rotation and stuff like that. Like, I think that's passable on wings, that you can, if you are, like, succeeding on the offensive end, like, that's something that you see on young guys like Andrew Williams and stuff like that all the time. Like, they are late and they try to play this Matador-style defense and come in and recover and stuff like that. But, like, you having that with your big that is not even adding that much on offense, like, that's a kind of a concern, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, with big men, it takes a little bit longer maybe to get the rotations down and stuff like that. But yeah, you would like to see a higher floor instincts-wise, for sure, just to build upon. Where would you take him in the draft right now if the draft was tomorrow?
I would hope he doesn't declare, like, because he's one of these guys that can burn you later on. So I will try not to rank him right now. Like, this is a bit of a lazy answer, but like, I really feel like he's a reasonable outcome that both him and Andrew Jones stay at Texas. Like, I think it's one of these things that all the guys could come back next year. I think, like, it's a possibility there. But if he does, like, I think he's one of the guys that at least I can see the upside, so I can, like, make a bet and try to talk myself into taking him in the first somewhere, but, like, not high, like, not even late top 20. Like, I would probably tend to, like, look at him if he's there available somewhere in the late first. But I don't think I can really talk myself into taking him or making a bet on him over some other wings, right? Because, like, when you are there, like, when you're already there, like, for me, it's either I like the guy enough to think he's a starter, I'm going to just bump him down a lot. Like, that's the difference. Like, that's why he can burn me a lot if he pans out, because, like, I'm probably some bigs, if I'm not confident enough to think that they can be starting bigs at the level, like, I would probably just put a bet on a bunch of wings ahead of them and just drop them 20 spots, even if they are most likely to be at least role players. Which is like a philosophy thing for me with the board building, I would say.
Absolutely. I think that's 100% spot on where I would come from as well. I'm not taking him over a guy like Donovan Mitchell, Mikal Bridges. Like, all those guys are, I mean, they're going to fit into the NBA climate much cleaner. And, you know, Allen has his warts. He has enough to where, yeah, I don't think he's Jahlil Okafor as far as mobility. I think he's much more mobile than that. But I don't think he's good enough defensively at this juncture to really, you know, warrant like close to a lottery selection. Probably not even top 25 for me.
Yeah, and it's a little bit like these people, like a lot of people think that guys that you are just athletic and then you can do a lot, and or you put up blocks and then you can do a lot defensively. Like, you can see with JaVale McGee, like, JaVale McGee is much more useful offensively for Golden State than anything else. Like, he's a complete disaster on defense, and it doesn't matter how athletic you are. Like, it's more about if you get it or not and if you are consistent on that end, especially for a big. So just to jump on the next guy, I think we should touch a little bit again on Robert Williams. Like, he's been playing mostly as the three for Texas A&M. He plays as some minutes as a big as well, but he's been even starting as a three in conference play. I think it's like completely a disaster for them. Like, I don't really understand how he's even putting up those like crazy rebounding numbers still. Like, he has really good rebounding percentage for a guy that is playing some minutes at the wing, like even the same blocking numbers, but still, like, I think I haven't seen enough in terms of him developing how he can help an offense in terms of like putting up screens, shooting the ball better, like extending the jumper. Like, he's good with his free throw numbers and all that. Like, I think it's more about like consistency with him, and especially on the defensive end, like being able to stick to his bread and butter, but like not jump too much for like blocks. Like, his closeouts are still a problem for me. I think he's like non-consistent in terms of like rotating, and like he tends to just focus a little bit too much on getting to those blocks spots that he likes.
Yeah, and I think defensively, yeah, he protects the rim probably better than anybody in this class. He's got good instincts. He recovers really well. Like, I keep coming back to this, but against that UCLA game where he like literally came from like foul line extended to block somebody's layup, and his arms are just freaking ridiculous. But like, I guess for him, what I like most about him is the subtle things. Like, I think he's a good passer. I think he's got good feel. Like, if you want to see him pass well, watch the first half against Vanderbilt. Like, he really carved up that zone, made a lot of like interior passes, like quick reads, like drop off, bounce passes that you don't see a lot of bigs make. Yeah. Like, I think his shooting might be a little overrated. He's just 5 of 37 on jump shots in the half court, which is not good. I mean, aesthetically, like, he makes some things look good. Like, he had a pull up off the dribble against Kentucky, like from foul line, that was pretty impressive. And he flashes that stuff. Like, he's got some kind of range. 0 of 13 from three right now, unfortunately. So it's more like projecting the shot, which I think can be there. It's just like we talk about, like, this is not like your traditional big. He doesn't do the subtle defensive things. He gets lost off the ball too much, has really raw technique. You'll see his back turned even in cases in pick and roll. So he doesn't really box out diligently. And when you compare that to like screen setting, like we talked about, a lot of this analysis is like what NBA coaches and what NBA teams are going to trust him with, because that has a dynamic effect on how successful he's going to be. And right now, it seems like he's going to be played at the four.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it, right? Like, at least in terms of frame and, like, the terms they're using him in Texas A&M, like, if they continue on that at the next level, That's the big deal, right? Because you can play two picks at the same time if they are good enough and they are going to make, give you consistent good defense and justify that, at least, for example, with Utah when Favors was healthy. That's an opportunity. That's a possibility. We'll see how it goes in New Orleans with Cousins and AD. But like, you have to have like a guy that can shoot and stretch a little bit between those two. So it depends a lot on where he goes, I guess. I think this theory that was a bit more prominent back in the day, where you can mix up a guy at the center position that doesn't really protect the rim with a four that can actually do that, is less of a useful thing or even a thing on Bog now. Because even if you can do that, like, you are losing a lot of that rim protection with the four guy having to rotate and move around the perimeter. Because normally that center that can protect the rim is also not quick enough to actually defend in the perimeter, right? So that's why you're going to have to move that rim protector to the perimeter and try to defend those shooters. So it's going to be a problem. And I don't know, like, with Robert Williams, like, if you are going to have him answering a defense, that could be his ideal role, both on defense and on offense, because he will have enough space. But also you have to wonder if he's going to be, like you say, like, enough of a factor in the pick and roll defense, enough of a rebounder for you, like, if you're going to struggle there, like, rebounding the ball with him on the floor as your biggest guy, or at least your most explosive guy in the front court. And then, like, you are alluring to, like, the blocks. Like, for me, he's a guy that chases blocks a little bit. Like, he's really good at recovering and, like, making blocks from behind and stuff like that. But, like, he's also a guy that will jump out of position and, like not be with his feet set sometimes, just because he just move up and try to get that block, right? So I think the passing is a nice thing to have and a tool, but you're not going to create or make the game go through him at the next level, I will say, or I will think. In part with Texas A&M, it has to do with their guards being completely woeful. So it's just part of that. Like, he has to create a little bit more for them, and they don't really have much more in terms of ball handlers and stuff like that, especially with DJ Hawk coming down, because he was kind of a point forward for them. So I think like that could go up for him, but I will be surprised if the turnovers don't go up as well a little bit. It's crazy for me that in conference play, even like lately, he has been playing at least, like, I would say mostly 75% of his minutes as a perimeter guy next to Trocha Morelos and Tyler Davis. And he still has like a 10% block percentage. Like, it's unreal. Like, I don't really know how he's keeping that up, like, for playing basically as a three-man for the Aggies.
Yeah, and he's like the one, I think in this class, he's the one surefire bet to protect the rim. He just has the mobility, he has the explosiveness. Like you talked about with the four, though, I want to get back to that. If he could dribble and like pass on the move, there'd be something there. But like, he's not a dribbler. He's not somebody that's gonna like take you off, beat you off closeouts, like go through his legs. He doesn't have that kind of handle. He's more of a finisher. Yeah. So like, that really limits, for me, that limits him a lot. Because when I look at fours, I want those playmakers, right? I want guys that you can either space or you can like make plays off the dribble. Those guys are invaluable. Like, we see what happened. I'm bringing this up every podcast, but now what's happening with Aaron Gordon? Like, fantastic at the four, like, big space player. Really effective there. I don't see any way that Williams, maybe he's like a Serge Ibaka in his prime. Like, if he can really like protect the rim that well and shoot threes, like, maybe you have like a four there, but I always thought that Ibaka was more of a five anyway. Like, we see what he's doing with the Raptors, like, versatility wise with that scheme. It's fantastic. But yeah, if he could dribble and actually like maneuver and have big man kind of small man perimeter skills, there'd be something there. But I really do think that he is a five, which screams kind of situational player with his build and like, yeah, just his lack of like really like adept big man qualities.
Yeah, to piggyback on that, like, if he develops that three to be a threat at the next level, and that's a possibility, I guess, that he's going to have a much easier time setting that off if he plays the five than if he plays the four, right? Like, that's another thing. Like, he's playing the five and he has more space, and like, he's going to be open more times. He's going to have slower guys closing out on him. Like, he's going to have a much higher percentage or much better efficiency if he's playing at that spot than if he's playing the four, where he's going to have like quicker guys closing out on him or like less space because he's playing next to another five. Like, that's part of it for me. And again, like you say, like, Ibaka didn't have much in terms of ball skills or in terms of passing either. So it's not like Williams needs that to be an effective player, but like, what he needs is probably to be a bit more, like you said, probably much more serious on defense, right? Like, those rotations, like, it's not like Ibaka was a stopper, but like, he could actually lock in some guys, and he was kind of in his prime really good in the pick and roll, like, because he can move his feet, he can actually close out on guys. And Robert Williams closing out on the 3-point lines, especially in the corners, like, that's kind of a problem for him nowadays. Like, I think it's not like the Aggies are making, like, doing him any favors putting him in that position, like, where he's playing as a starting three, and the guy that comes from the bench now is Spanish Eric Vila, that is also a probably projected four in my mind. So it's like they don't really have much in terms of like putting him in a spread pick and roll, just go to work, try to finish lobs and just protect the rim on the other side. But he's just one of these guys that if he's a situational big and he's just a backup guy, he just loses a ton of value for me, because it's not that like his profile is that common between backup bigs, because it's more like other, like just like either those big guys that can't do anything other than score, or just guys that are too small and they're not going to protect the rim, but they're going to be able to stretch. So he could bring both potentially, and that's useful. But it's just like, you can pretty much get backup bigs for free nowadays, or at least if you are able to absorb those type of contracts, right? So if that's the only piece you are lacking or the piece you are missing, I don't really know how high you can be on the guy. Like, how high you think he goes if he declares, actually?
I would say right now he definitely goes top 20. I think maybe lottery. I'm not sure. I think the teams are going to have these kind of, the league still thinks more traditional than people give them credit for. Like they're like, this is whole new small ball age. I think they still are like, these guys are legit fives. And I don't think they view Rob Williams as a legit five. And I think that's going to hurt him a little bit. And like, I think that's where like maybe a Justin Patton, who we can move into now, might benefit a little bit just because he has that legitimate, positional size for the five. And I think that coaches are going to trust him more, just being out there size-wise, even though I have really like large reservations about his rim protection ability.
Yeah, that's for sure. And he's also another guy that doesn't really do much in terms of rebounding. Like, it's true, sometimes he's just out of position, or just like they switch him out, or he's like not really close by. Like, I think that was an issue last year with Marcus Chris with Washington, because they switched all the time and he was not really there to be able to grab the rebound, or even like not even in range to be boxing out. But like with Patton, I think he's a little bit similar in terms of offensive capability to Zach Collins. Like I say, like he's mainly a role guy that is always being able to pop a little bit, and he has shown some versatility to that, like being able to shoot the jumper. He's not as good in terms of free throw shooting as Collins, so maybe that's a bit of an optimistic view for him to be a pop guy. But like nonetheless, like he's a guy that can actually finish in the pick and roll. He's able to create space. He's really long and really really tall as well. So he has that pop as well that you see with those guys that are able to finish around the rim. And I think he's a little bit more creative than Zach Collins around the rim in terms of being able to contort a little bit more. I think he's more fluid athletically, at least with Collins sometimes. I mean, he's fluid, but like, I feel like he's like, I don't know, it's his knees, or like he's just a guy that doesn't move the lower body all that much when he jumps. And I think Patton is a bit more like built like a wing. He's also a guy that is probably going to need more time to build up strength. Like, he redshirted last year. He's a bit older than some of the other freshmen due to that. But I think mainly he was trying to probably build up. I don't really know if he was injured. He's just like trying to get up to the physicality level of NCAA. But he's still roughly, 220 pounds, something like that. Like, he's a 7-footer almost. Like, that's going to be an issue for them also.
Yeah, for me, I always start with big men. I'm always starting with defense. Going to see how do you defend the rim? And his instincts just aren't good. He doesn't recover well. He doesn't recover like Robert Williams does. He doesn't challenge guys enough, like around the rim. Like, if you watch the Nova game from yesterday, like, he's in position to rotate over a couple times and he's just late instinctually. Like, it doesn't register for him to like recover and block shots. Like, he ends up just like going vertical, which can help because he's big and he can be like a problem if he goes vertical, and he's learned that pretty well. But I just don't really trust him as a anchor defensively, protecting the rim and boxing out on the glass. Like, at this point, like, I really like his offense. He does a lot of things offensively. Like, his efficiency is just insane. Like, his finishing around the rim, he is touched with both hands. He can, you know, he's explosive, above the rim kind of player. He can post up, go over either shoulder, which is really nice to have. And I actually think his passing is really underrated. It's just, can you really do that much with a guy that doesn't defend at a high level?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, because I was going with the positive a little bit before murdering him there, but like, yeah, that's completely true. Like, earlier in the season, I was trying to make excuses for the poor rebounding numbers. Like, I was trying to look at it from another angle, but like, I think nowadays, like, you can just note that he's probably not that much of a physical guy, right? Like, they need him more now offensively as well, since Mo Watson went down and all that. Like, they need him a bit more on offense, and he's going to get, like, he's getting a bigger usage there, but like, I think the main issue here is probably like how much of a value, if he's just a decoy that is going to be a gravity guy that creates offensively that way and creates space and eats up space that way, that's useful to have. But like, if you're not bringing it up on the other end, like, it's difficult to consider him as a starter, right? Like, that's another point with him. Like, that's something we're running back at all the time with these guys. Like, which guy you are kind of sold on being a starter because of the profile they have, right? And that's part of it with Patton. And I'm not sold on him there. And that's why, like, I was higher on him earlier on, but then after watching more, after checking more advanced metrics for him and how he has turned it on and up and doing conference play, like, I think it's just a bit of how much, like, of a role you can give him in terms of being able to start for your team. And that's another line that you can try to write down at the draft. Like, for me, it's difficult to know where the value of these bench guys and these bench bigs potentially, or if they are only situational offensive profiles, where is the line for them to their value to be bigger or higher for just a win that you are making a bet on? Like, where is the difference there? And as well, like, both for the late first, that I think is where you are trying to make those bets before you enter in the second, and also for the late lottery territory, right? And that's where you have to try to put those guys on and try to differentiate between them and the wings. I was running the today earlier, tried of like a redraft of the 2012 class. And I was wondering, like, where is the value for Andrew Drummond? Like, are you putting Andrew Drummond? He's a guy that has panned out as well as you might want, even if he's not there in terms of defensive effort and protecting the rim for Detroit. But like, where is Andrew Drummond drafted again? Are you drafting him ahead of the wings that pan out from that class? Are you drafting him ahead of even Mo Harless? Like, there are some lines there in terms of which value you're bringing, especially if you draft a guy like this early and he pans out and you end up paying him a lot because he's a 7-footer, and we know how that drives people crazy in terms of hype and in terms of money. Like, that's a lot of deep thinking for bigs, right? Like, you have to assess the value, right? And that's where most people have gotten this type of stuff wrong later on, and why we have had so many busts that have been big men.
Yeah, I mean, you have to value big men at their present cost for the most part. And people don't do a good job of this because they see the upside. I get the upside with Pat, and I get the upside with Robert Williams. And I do think there is a differentiation between someone like those guys and Ivan Rabb, who I don't see.
Yeah.
I don't see any kind of way he becomes a starter at the NBA level, where I could see a situation where Patton could be a starter. It's just a question of how do you value that, like you said, in the draft. You have to differentiate between those two different things. At what point does he become, like, legitimate to draft? Like, maybe he's more enticing than, like, a Donovan Mitchell, but I see Donovan Mitchell's role as much clearer in the NBA than Patton's. I think he can fit in and fill a role right now. And Patton does have some upside, especially offensively, as, like, a dual pick-and-roll kind of guy. But, like, defensively, he just doesn't do the things that we see these elite defensive players in the league doing at the five position. So, yeah, I mean, right now, I had him probably in the 12 to 13 range earlier this year, mostly because I really liked the way he improved kind of game by game. You could kind of see it, like the picture formulating a little bit, but it hasn't gotten to the point this far into the season where I thought it would be, especially like protecting the rim. So right now it's like, how do you value him and Robert Williams, like, in the lottery? Do you have those guys as lottery guys?
I don't. I probably have them a couple, like, at least 8 or 9 spots lower than you. I'm just going with all the wings first. Like, if I'm not sold on them, I'm just not even going to think about it, because I think I'm going to end up talking myself into, yeah, the possibility, yeah, the ceiling might be higher, but, like, I just don't want to play that game. I prefer just to drop them down, and if they prove me wrong, they prove me wrong, that's great. I'm just going to go with the wings. Like, if I'm drafting there, I'm going to try to make my homework and try to get whoever wing is more worth it of that type of pick in the 20s, or in the top 20, sorry, and then, like, try to nab those guys if they're available later on. Like, I'm okay with drafting as many bigs as you want between the 20 spot and the late first round. Like, I'm okay with that. I would probably try to gamble again with more wings, especially with the guys that you don't even know if they're worthy of a first round. Like, you will go more into the Raps and the Bam Adebayos of the world and stuff like that, and the John Collinses and all that. Like, that's part of it. Like, I think you have to, at least, I think I'm there in terms of making the differentiation between the guys that might be worth it of the top 20 pick, like the Robert Williams, the Justin Pattons, the Markkanens, the Zach Collinses and all that. And the guys that I know is more like late first or early second, right? And that's where you have to, there are two lines for me there, one in the lottery or the top 20 and the other one in the first. And that's where I'm trying to draw a line, right? And that's the problem for me. Like, I think it's difficult to find enough wings to be able to downgrade those guys and drop them completely. But if I could, I would probably drop them completely. Like, that's my thinking here. Like, it's kind of an issue. I'm trying to talk myself into a lot of wings. But no, like, I understand, like, if somebody takes Patton number 20 overall, for example, I'm not going to burn anybody for doing that and buying on the guy's upside. But like, I don't think I'm there in terms of late lottery. Like, I think I would still prefer to go with some of the wings. Like, I think late lottery, there's enough guys for that, and there's enough guys to take a pick on that range.
Yeah, you and Mark did a really good job during our big board discussion of illuminating this. Like, you're not sold on the big, which I wasn't at the time. I wasn't sold on the wings either. But really, if you're not sold on the bigs and you're not sold on the wings, take the wing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they have more positional value in the league right now, and especially the ones that have a clearer avenue to succeed. But like, conversation gets really, really interesting for me when we start talking about Lauri Markkanen, because we can see the established skill. We talk about the differentiation between established and projectable skill. He's one of the best versatile shooting big men we've seen. I mean, he can do it all. He's 11 of 23 shooting off screens. He's in the 95th percentile in jump shots in the half court. It's just insane. 14 of 33 on dribble jumpers, which is like what he really separates himself with. Like, you don't see, like, Frank Kaminsky can't do that. He can't, like, take a dribble and, like, pull up. He can't, like, fade away. Like, Markkanen has some really impressive shots where, like, it's contested off the bounce. He's going left or something. He can just pull and fade away right over the guy. Like, it's not like Dirk where it's like a one-legged deal. But really, like, it's rare to see that. So, like, I get the allure of him. But, like, do you really want to design your offensive system around Lauri Markkanen? He has offensive gravity as a shooter. He's going to be respected in pick and pops. And that's, and like, when Kane's ice coverage is on the side, like, he's going to be pretty much unguardable if you have a good guard, just because, like, no big's going to be able to recover to him shooting threes. He's too tall, and he has that high release point, and it's too quick. But, like, again, he's not Nikola Jokic. He's not, like, a guy who's going to, like, you're going to run your offense through and he can facilitate. And you're taking so much off the table defensively. So how do you rank that?
No, and I think it's a little bit like you were talking about Dirk. Like, Dirk was not Jokic, but like later on in his career, like when he started to put it together and when Nas left and they turned the setting a little bit more to the half court and more things running through Dirk, like he was a really capable passer. Like, he was a guy that could just create of the middle post and get really good looks for everybody else. And I think Markkanen hasn't saw any of that. What he can do offensively in terms of like getting through his motions and getting his shot off is unreal. Like, I think he can even do these shooting guards more runs like Jared does, like running to the screen, running hard, getting the ball, getting the space. Like, he can do it, even all that, even at his height and with his speed. Like, I know the leverage isn't going to be there if you put a wing on him, because he's going to struggle more in terms of like getting the space for them. But like, he's so freaking tall that he probably just can shoot over much, yep, like a ton of them, right? And like, the point with Dirk is clear, because Dirk earlier in his career had issues with guys like with Tracy McGrady, with Bruce Bowen, like guys like that, but they weren't tall enough to probably contest, but they were long enough to probably get in his face. And he didn't really get to do other stuff in terms of the passing game and all that. And after Nas left and after they turned the system around him, he kind of developed all that. So I think it all depends on the ceiling you're seeing for Markkanen. Like, if you think he can develop all that type of game and he can get stronger, he can get better on the boards, he can be playable as a five on sometimes, like, if you believe on that type of things and you project all that to be doable, I think he's worthy of a really high pick. My problem with him is, like, if he's not, he's just more of another situational pick. As good as he is, he's probably going to be, in terms of role, like, he's more, has more diversity and stuff of that, like that, to his jumper than Channing Frye. But in terms of role, he's going to be probably a pick and pop from the bench. There's going to be a high volume shooter, and he's going to be just a situational guy and a threat and a guy to create gravity. And if that's all you are going to get and you're drafting him, not even like, I'm not thinking even top 5, top 10 or stuff like that. Like, I think you are going to kind of flop there in terms of like drafting him ahead of some of the other wings. So that's my issue there. Unless you believe in him as a high usage guy that is going to actually be able to run a little bit of the offense through him, or at least in terms of being able to create a little bit of passing game due to his gravity and to the wherever he draws the defense towards. I think unless you see all that, and I think the rebounding could be okay down the road. I think he's a guy that suffers a lot from his lack of strength. Like, he gets completely beaten down sometimes. Like, he has people jumping over him, people completely abusing him and going at him on the boards. Like, I think that has the potential of improving a little bit if he gets stronger. But for me, I see him as a guy that is big size, but he has a wing game kind of, and that's good if you do all the big things as well. But if you don't do any of the big things that you are supposed to do as a big, that becomes a problem, because they can just stick a wing on you and completely destroy your game. And if not, it's just even easier for a team to get the same type of ability and shooting ability and gravity, and just play a wing that is able to do a little bit more on defense and at least be able to move and just contest and switch on the pick and roll and stuff like that. And just unless he's able to play the five in those senses, because a wing is not going to be able to do all those things and as well and play the 5-2 because of size matters. If he's not able to translate to that position, it's going to be an issue for me just not to be convinced of, well, okay, I just play another wing instead of playing him to be able to at least be respectable on defense, because I don't see a venue for him on the court playing the four. If you are just playing against small ball lineups, like that's going to be a problem for him, like, or to put him in the pick and roll all the time. He's mobile, but like, he has awful instincts and awareness. Like he rotates over and over. He's like a dancing guy there out there. Like he's just moving all the time. I think he panics a little bit as well. Like he's not certain about his defense and he's not all that confident either. So I think it could be experience things, but like just that profile is not quite there for me.
Yeah, he's one of the worst rim protectors I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's
like, flat out. Like for a 7-footer, like it's not just the stats. Everybody points at the block steals. It's like, yeah, that's really damning stuff. But like, just watch him. Like his lack of length is just so, it just kills him every time. Like he'll be in position to contest, but he doesn't have the vertical pop and he doesn't have the length to really do anything there. So really, he lacks that physicality. He lacks, you know,
all the strength. Like you see his feet, upper body, his feet, like he has like the fine body and all that. But like he lacks a lot of strength when he tries to even contest and jump against guys. Like he can get beaten down and moved by guards. Like that's the issue there. Like he's basically a supersized wing in terms of the role he plays, I would say.
No, it's really well put. And like the game against Washington and stuff, like Washington was switching guards onto him and he couldn't really move him. Like he can shoot over guys. Like he's pretty good in the post at just turning around and over either shoulder and like shooting fadeaways. Like I don't have a lot of problems with him there. I think he's going to be able to shoot over guys in like the mid post, for example. It's just like the physicality. Yeah, and I think he's more diverse than like Dragan Bender as far as a score at the next level, because he can shoot in the post and he can actually do some things like inside. Like Dragan, that was the problem with him, is like, can he beat mismatches? And I think that Lowry can at least just shoot right over him. The question is, like, he's not fast and he's not explosive. So like, if he's not going to shoot, he's not like a really adept passer either. So like, is he going to take, like, I totally agree with what you said about the four versus the five. To extract maximum value from him, you're going to have to play him at the five offensively, because that's when he can use his, like, a little bit of agility with the ball to, like, blow by closeouts, perhaps, and, like, shoot off the dribble. But really, you're looking at, like, probably a lot of mid-range shots, because I don't see him, like, in the NBA, like, fast enough to really attack and get to the rim and finish. Like, that was the problem with Kaminsky, and that's been his problem, is, like, can you really do anything if you chase him off a three-point line?
Yeah, but he's not really that fluid with the ball. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Like, he's a little bit like, that's the, like, when we're talking about Bender or even, like, when we're talking about Kaminsky, like, Olynyk, for example, another of these guys, like, Olynyk was much more fluid with the ball. I think that's another thing that Bender has over these guys. Like, he can really put the ball on the floor, put some people on the stage, like, move around. Like, I think he can do that. Like, he's a fluid guy, even if he's not a finished product physically. I think, like, Markkanen is mobile. He's okay in terms of, like, how he can move side to side. Like, he's not super, he's not fast or anything, but like he's mobile enough. But it's just like he's not fluid in terms of like with the ball on his hand. There's a big difference between athleticism and like ability and speed and all that with and without the ball. And if you are just a one level guy in that end, like you are not able to create for yourself, like that's the drawing line and the differentiating line between him and people that are putting him to have the upside of Dirk, because Dirk could do all that. Like, Dirk could just put the ball on the floor and go to work. And he's not going to do that. And he's more like a situational shooter, or the guy that maybe can attack closeouts, but not really go to the rim, like you said. And even if he gets to the rim, like, is he going to get through people at the rim? Like, he's just, like, I don't see a venue for him finishing there or being a good finisher there. Like, he's just too hard. Like, I think he will have to play with four other shooters that are as good as him to be able to stretch the floor enough for him to get there and actually have a good chance to either get the free throw or get a basket, right? Like, he's just, he doesn't get a much of extension there. Like, he's not that long. He's just a problem there physically. Like, I think if you see a way for him maturing enough into his body and developing that physicality, I'm a bit against projecting people developing a character switch so he can, like, completely be a monster in that regard. Like, I think that was one of the reasons I was kind of low with Andre Drummond in his class, because I didn't see that type of attitude that you could see even with DeAndre Jordan if he didn't do anything at Texas A&M. Like, he was a guy that liked to do that type of, like, pushing people and actually get into people's faces and all that. Like, you just, like, if you don't see that from him, or a little bit of it at least, or a little bit of that dog mentality, I know this is just super cliche, but like, I think it's important with bigs in terms of at least the physicality part of it.
No, yeah. And you talk to NBA guys, and what they say is, like, what wins in the league, mental and physical toughness. And like, when I think of Lauri Markkanen, it's the complete opposite of both of those things. I don't think he's physically tough. I don't think he's mentally tough. And he plays like you said, he plays like a shooting guard kind of at the five spot. So, and I really agree with what you said about Bender. I was just meaning more towards, like, I think Markkanen has a better shot to, like, shoot off the dribble and stuff. But Bender's more athletic and he can pass on the move. And that's kind of, if Markkanen really showed more as a passer, I'd buy a little bit more, even though, like, when we talk about situational bigs, if you don't play defense, in my opinion, you're mostly going to be a situational big at the five spot, at least. And if you play Markkanen at the four, like, you lose that kind of agility advantage. He basically just becomes a spot up wing. And why wouldn't you just play a wing that can defend that?
Perfectly fine. Like, just the thing. Like, if you can play a wing and you can actually be more mobile than Markkanen, even better on the boards. Like, I think there are going to be several guys on the wing or, like, combo forwards that are going to be able to play with more physicality on the boards or even be longer than Markkanen and be able to reach higher for boards. Like, you are not going to lose much either way. And, like, to your point with Bender, like, the main thing for me is, like, Markkanen might be able to shoot off the dribble better for sure, but, like, he's always going to do that. Like, he's going to maybe gets by a guy and he's going to just settle for that jumper. Like, he's not a guy that is going to look for the passing line, not going to look to out to the rim. I think Bender, if anything, at least he will be looking for the passing line. Like, that's the main thing here. Like, I think Bender can develop into that type of okay shooter or enough of a good shooter to be able to draw people to the three-point line, be able to attack a closeout, be able to get to bite people and be able to get to do that pass because he opens the space, or even shoot that jumper in the mid-range and be okay at it, probably not as good as Markkanen, but who cares? Like, that jumper is not even that efficient, right? Like, that's the main here. I mean, difference here, like, we're talking about Zach Collins before. Like, I think Collins can be an okay shooter and he can be much better than Markkanen defensively, and you can even play him at the five and lead with that. Like, it's not that important that he doesn't have the versatility to his jumper that Markkanen has. And to your point about the question, where do you have him, or if he's important in that range, in the late lotto and all that, and, like, where is he? Like, I think he's there just because of the offensive threat he can be. But, like, we had this discussion, we were talking about the boards, and you had just Monk ahead of Markkanen just because Monk is not a big and his defense is not as important. I have them in a similar range tier. I have Monk clearly ahead, but I think both offensively are kind of a specialist. It's just much easier to live with Monk defense than with Lowry defense on the court. Like, that's the main difference between those two.
There's no question. Yeah, you can usually hide one wing on, like, the least good offensive player on the other team. Like, for the most part, like, against the really good teams, like, Golden State's going to make you pay regardless. Like, their starting lineup, at least. You can't do anything with them. But, yeah, I think that Markkanen is a very valuable situational piece. If you can have him come off the bench and he can be, like, a specialized role, I think he can really thrive. We've seen that. I think he can be, like, a better offensive version of Channing Frye. I think that's a great comparison. But
yeah, probably worse on defense, but yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, what do you really do with that? Like, if you're taking him top seven, top five, you have to give him some Dirk equity, because Dirk is the only player, like, maybe Kevin Love, but they're not really that similar. Like,
no.
Yeah, if Dirk's the only player at that spot that's been, like, such an outlandishly good shooter and self-creator for others, well, I should say self-creator and then creator for others, that he's been, like, a fixture of your offense. And in this class, there's just no way I'm taking Lowry top seven. I wouldn't even take him until maybe the late lottery, just as, like, a really useful bench chip.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, the thing I would say with him, like, we're talking about this situational thing and the big stuff like that. Like you said earlier on him, like, at least with him, it's not a projected thing. It's a thing that is going to happen. Like, he's going to be a useful offensive player for sure for any team that uses him right. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of these guys are maybe situational players, maybe not. Maybe they bust. I don't see a way or a venue for Lowry to bust completely out or completely flop out of the league. So if that's the thing, like, at least you are drafting a guy that might be not of a super high ceiling player, but you know what you're getting, like, if you are getting him late lottery. Like, he's going to be a productive player for you. Maybe he will be a positive. I don't know if he's going to be a positive for a team that is going to be a super contending top two in the league. But, like, a lot of franchises don't draft with that in mind. Like, you have to take that into consideration, why players get overdrafted, why some players that could be only good enough for a bench role in a championship player gets drafted top 10, just because other teams are not completely in the business of winning championships. And that's completely respectable, as long as you know that when you're making your pick. It's the same with Lonzo and Fultz. Like, if you're making the pick knowing where you're putting the ball and which role are you doing him, that's completely fine if you know the right role for him. It's just, you have to have that in mind, and you have to have that in mind that you might pass on guys that might be better if you are actually trying to win the chip. And that's the main distinction we have within other people, I think. Like, that's why we have less bigs on the top, and we are trying to kind of win for defenses, actually. Not even win. Like, just go with the wings. Like, just that's the main thing here.
Hey, guys. I want to take time out of the show briefly to tell you a little bit about Almighty Baller's newest sponsor, Handy.com and the Handy app. My favorite apps are the ones that are simpler and make life easier. And Handy does just that. As most people obviously don't know, because that'd be incredibly creepy, I do this podcast out of a makeshift studio in my man cave, which unfortunately was recently flooded. I thought it was a drainage leak from multiple faucets. It ended up being a construction issue requiring the use of a handyman. Regardless, the Handy app had a solution and was so easy to use that I referred my landlord to it. The app has different interfaces: home cleaning, handyman, plumbing, electrical, and interior paint. It's a really easy process, guys. You just select a general category such as plumbing, describe the job in detail, select an appointment time, and provide a zip code and credit card information, and ultimately just select from a list of pre-approved services. It's really that easy. Handy is helping Almighty Baller keep What's on Draft on the net by sponsoring the network and by offering listeners the following: 50% off cleaning services using the code ALMIGHTY50, 15% off handyman, plumbing, and electrical services using the code ALMIGHTY15. Handy is the quickest, most reliable way to book household service providers. Within a couple of minutes, you can book a pre-approved cleaner or handyman for any time you'd like. Again, the codes are 50% off cleaning services using the code ALMIGHTY50 and 15% off handyman, plumbing, or electrical services using the code ALMIGHTY15. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
To switch a little bit to guys that are more like probably stretch fours or more in that category that is almost dying, or even playmaking fours could be that you think you trust their passing abilities. I think it's good to put against each other the ones of TJ Leaf and Tyler Lydon. It's just like, I think a lot of people are sleeping a little bit on Lydon. I'm not a super fan in terms of his ceiling, but I like a lot of what he brings to the table. You made an article, I think it was not even the step back yet, right? It was still...
I think it was still upside motor at that point, yeah.
Yeah, still, right. About Lydon. And what impressed me the most about him last year is, first, he does have that type of physicality at times. Like, he's kind of explosive. He tries hard. He kind of doesn't avoid contact. And also, he can pass on the move a little bit. And that was enticing for me, because if he draws the attention to the perimeter and to that three-point shooting ability he has, he's able to make a pass, I think, enough. And the main difference with him and with TJ Leaf, I think Leaf could be a little bit better of a passer, a little bit better on the post. But I don't really see, like, I was having this argument in Real General Manager the other day, and some people were like arguing to me that you can use Leaf in the post, you can actually run your offense. Like, I don't see any venue where offenses that are good in the next level that are going to play through TJ Leaf at the post or even try to post him up, unless he's against switches or stuff like that, which is good enough and okay enough, because it's good to have that in your arsenal. But like, if you are a better shooter, and I think Lydon is a better shooter than Leaf, and you are a little bit better defensively and protecting the rim, I think the problem with Leaf is like, he dies on screens. Like, this UCLA team, like, they are not good when they have to like make a second defensive play or like actually like pay attention for more than like 10-15 seconds. So that's my main issue with him. I don't know where you're at with them. I think Lydon might be a worse player in a vacuum, but like, I think he's more useful in the NBA.
Yeah, I think I agree with that logic. For me, they're both backup reserve kind of fours. To me, they're not very, they're not versatile. I would rather, like, with the way the league's gone, I'd rather play Al Farouq Aminu at the four. I'd rather I'd rather draft OG and have him play the four than play either one of these guys there, just because, like you said, they don't really do enough offensively to negate the defensive shortcomings. I agree that Lydon, I think he's the better shooter. He can do, like, he can shoot in versatile ways. Better athlete. He's pretty explosive. I don't know. Maybe he's more explosive. Like, but yeah, Leaf, his reactionary skills are really awesome. That's where, like, when you notice him play against Kentucky, like, he would beat everybody on Kentucky to the glass, because he just has that kind of instincts and that reactionary athleticism.
I thought that you were talking about defense. There I agree. Like, he's a bit slow in terms of defensive rotations and all that. Like, I thought you were going there.
Defense. Yeah, I think Lydon's probably better on defense as far as just agility and stuff like that. But offensively, Leaf kind of flashes that. He can pass. I mean, he does a lot of things that you think he's going to get drafted higher, because this is how the NBA thinks. They see the shooting. They see, like, the playmaking. They're like, oh, playmaking four. I just don't know if he really has the overall package to do that, especially when he takes things off the table defensively.
Yeah, the thing is, like, the shooting, like, he's not taking that much of, like, super high volume from the three, and his free throw numbers are just okay. Like, he's a 66 or 67 free throw shooter, which is fine, but, like, it's not like he's shooting a ton of threes. Like, he's shooting two per game in this happy pass UCLA offense that they're just shooting threes all game. And I think Lydon is a more automatic shooter. Like, I think he has, like, a quicker release, and I think he's going to be better there. It's just, he's maybe not to be able to do much more offensively other than maybe make a pass or two. But, like, if you are going to be able to live with Lydon on defense a little bit better, I think he has an easier way to be a starter, eventually, even if he's in a specialized role than Leaf, right? Like, that's my main thinking here. Like, I know some people are higher on Leaf playmaking ability, on Leaf, like I said, on the post, but I don't think there is a way for him to showcase all that. And the thing is, like, defensively, I think there is no way that Lydon completely destroy your team. And I think Leaf is not a guy that is going to bring much to the table. Like, Lydon, it's true that these numbers are not all that useful with Syracuse zone system and all that, but like, he's been consistently good in terms of blocking shots, even when they put him at the five, like, he's able to contest. I think he has a bit more of defensive awareness in those settings than Leaf. And just, I will go with Lydon, even if it's just a marginal call, but I'm pretty certain that Leaf is going to get drafted much higher than him, actually.
Yeah, for me, I just group them really closely because I think they're the same kind of, I mean, there's subtle differences like you've touched on, but just overall archetype wise, I just don't value this archetype that much. We've just seen too many of these kind of like stretch bigs who don't do enough of that. Like, I'm kind of high on Lydon's playmaking, but he's more of like a one or two dribble guy and then pass.
Yeah, for sure.
He's not going to like make like really hard reads attacking closeouts. Like, he's mostly just like, he's competent enough to maybe he can blow by a guy and then hit like an easy rotation pass.
So, I mean, he's more of a ball mover than a creator.
That's a great way to put it. Exactly. So, and Leaf, I think he's a little bit more advanced. His vision's a little bit better. Like, he can see things, like, better angles from the post. A lot of that's just UCLA's climate because the ball's always moving. Everybody's head's on a swivel and they make reads and stuff. But yeah, I think what's going to happen is Leaf's probably going to go top
20. Late lotto.
Maybe. Yeah, he's going to go late lottery, top 20 for sure. And then Lydon might go like maybe even round two. And
yeah, I will say so. I think he's going to go between 35 and 40 or something like that.
Yeah, and like that, I don't agree with. I just don't get the differentiation as much. Like, that, there shouldn't be that large of a gap. We're talking about a very similar archetype in the league and how they need to thrive, and they just don't have it defensively to really be impact guys.
We would agree, though, that if you think a wing is able to translate, like, you should get a wing. Like, if he's going to be able to at least be serviceable, defensive rebounding and all that, you should just go with a win ahead of these guys, right? Like, that's the main thinking here. It's just like, are you getting enough wings? Like, which guys are you like completely sold on drafting in the late first? If we are both categorizing Lydon and Leaf maybe as late first guys, like, are you going to draft Justin Jackson ahead of them? Like, I know you and Mark touched on him, and I'm a bit higher on him than Mark for sure, and probably you. But like, are you comfortable enough to make those calls? Like, that's the main thinking here for me, and that's something we've been coming like up and down again all the time. With the draft, like, before we were talking about the pure picks, but now even with the fours that don't have much of a venue other than playing four or maybe some five with Lydon sometimes, if you go really down in terms of smaller lineups, like, are you even drafting those guys ahead of wins that you like a bit more, even if you don't like the wins that much? Like, I was making the point earlier today in Twitter, like, do you draft in 2012, like, we had guys drafted like Jared Salinger and Andrew Nicholson and guys like that. Like, nowadays, like, if you were drafting a game, would you prefer to make a call on Jeff Taylor that is playing for Real Madrid? And he's not like an awesome player, even an awesome defender. He can't really shoot much. But like, would you make the call on him ahead of those guys? Because those guys can either really play in the case of like Nicholson, or in the case of Salinger, he's just a small size center that can't really protect the rim, and his shooting is just okay. Like, that's like, at one point, like, I would prefer to just make a bet, unless I'm really like needing a backup big if I'm a contending team and I have that type of a late pick, and just like go with a win, right? Like, that's my motto there.
No question for me. And yeah. I would rather take Alec Peters in like mid second round or like early second round compared to these guys. Yeah. Like, if I'm an invest,
I can see that.
Yeah. If I'm like a playoff team and I need like a bench four shooter, like, that's what I would do. If I needed that specific kind of player, I would not draft them in the top 20 because you're just not going to get a return on your investment there. But like, as a very situational shooter type, I prefer Peters because I know he's going to go maybe early second round, maybe mid. And he's a really smart player, knockdown shooter as well, even though his 3-point percentage is down a little bit this year. But I believe in his shooting as much as these guys. Like, overall,
there's a counter argument to all this. Also, like, would you prefer then to make a bet on Robert Williams in the, like, let's say top 20 or fringe top 20, or go with Jordan Bell late second? Like, there's this argument going all the time. Like, you could wrap it around with several guys. Like, that's the main thing here. Like, I think it's tricky overall. And if you can talk yourself into the crop of wings, like, I've been arguing with this with a bunch of people on Twitter, like, even your partner Chris Stone from the step back and all that, and he didn't just find enough wins for his mock drafts for the website. And he's just like, I would just bunch like all the wings available that I think they are okay or okay-ish, I just go with them ahead of these guys. Like, I'm okay with Lydon. I think he's going to get drafted lower than expected, and that's probably why I like him a bit more, because I think he's a bit underrated. I'm probably the opposite with Leaf. But just like, it's not even an argument for me. Like we said, like, just, if you can get with other wings that you might talk yourself into, just do that, I would say.
Yeah, let's wrap up the big man discussion. Let's just briefly go over Ivan Rabb, Bam Adebayo, and then like our thoughts on the rest. Like, Harry Giles, let's start there.
For sure.
Like, what have you seen any kind of improvement from him?
I haven't seen much of Duke lately, honestly. Like, it's a bit annoying to watch them. Like, I think they have been better with a bit more Frank Jackson. And if he could pass a little bit more, maybe I was right with my preseason ranking on him. If he can show that at one point in his life, like, I have him like late lottery.
Yeah.
Disclaimer, not yet there. But like, I would say, like, I think at least we can be sure that Giles is going to be a good rebounder. I think he brings that to the table in terms of skill for sure. And it's just how much of his skill set is going to be dependent of his athleticism. And that's why I was not even that high on him to begin with. Like, I was high enough to have him top 10, of course, from what I've seen from before, with especially US basketball and all that. But like, it's just like, he's a guy that I don't think he's going to do more than be a pick and roll threat if he gets his athleticism back and the pop back. And I don't see a venue for him. Like, he's not even going to get that much of an advantage instead of posting up. So there is no way that you can actually run that type of play for him to even get to a pass or to set a pass or to set another play or to set an advantage against a wing. Like, I think he doesn't have those moves of that fluidity. And in terms of facing, like, he hasn't shown that much, or at least from the games I've seen from Duke, hasn't shown that much. So I think he's an elite rebounder. Even with shot knees, he's there. Like, in terms of numbers and the advanced metrics, he's going to be awesome there. It's just like how much you can project otherwise. And we have seen that the reactionary athleticism that we were praising before with guys like Leaf, even like offensively especially, like, I don't see that with him with his rotation. Like, sometimes, especially earlier on when I saw him more, when he just came back from the injury, so that could be a part of it. Like, he was just like, not even late, like, just out of place or jumping off place, even instead of like jumping towards guys. Like, that just, I don't really, I have to, of course, we have to see more, and that could be a guy that can just burn you if you underdraft him. But just like, I'm being like a bit of like murky waters with him, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just the vertical pop is not there. You can see that on, even when he gets the rebound. I agree, he's a really good rebounder, really good instincts, good reactionary athleticism. So, like,
he works hard also. He works really hard.
Good motor. The thing with me is he's only 8 of 25 on putbacks. Like, that is symbolic to me of a guy that just doesn't have that kind of vertical pop. Like, he doesn't have that explosion. And his instincts protecting the rim are really poor, in my opinion. He struggles in pick and roll. I think he can get better there because he has that agility to at least be competent. But he hasn't been good as far as, like, the mental aspect of it. Duke gets picked apart by good teams in pick and roll, and he's a large part of that. Like, he just struggles containing space. And that's something that we, coming into the season, that was what I was betting on with him, is that he was going to be an elite perimeter defender for a big. And, like, maybe not quite as, like, good as Nerlens Noel type. Maybe not that much, but, like, really close to being, like, hyper, like, agile, hyper elite there. And we haven't seen any of that.
Yeah, because he looks the part in terms of physical profile, right? Like, he's a thin guy that has that type of, like, you can think about him as a big wing build up. Like, he even looks a little bit like Harrison Barnes physically. Like, you can think about that if you're looking at him. He's just like, he doesn't move that much or that well. Like, it's just like, you have to see a bit more there. I don't know if he's basically completely shut down because of the knees, and he's going to show more in workouts. I think there is no way he doesn't declare, because he is going to just lose even more hype and there's of like being drafted high if he comes back and he shows even worse or he gets hurt again, God forbid. But like, he is just a complete shot in the darkness, even as much as Skal. Like, I know with Skal, he at least got to show that he couldn't play, so we could just scratch that down. But like, with Giles, like, he's just, other than rebounding, like, he hasn't so much more. Like, he plays hard, he tries on the boards especially, but like, it's just like, I knew he was not going to be a guy that was going to make plays or make passes or just even have much of a like one-on-one offense or just even like the shooting. I was doubtful about, like, I was not that sold on that. But like, if he's not even that type of defensive profile that you were talking about, it's just difficult for see a venue of him other than being a defensive specialist, right? Like, that's the thing, and he's not going to give us the chance of watching him more this year, I would say.
Yeah, you have to draft him right now as a backup big. And I think you have to differentiate it between high upside, because we haven't seen any kind of high upside for him this year. I haven't seen anything to suggest that he's the same player that he used to be. So maybe like for me, he's behind like Robert Williams even, because I think that at least you can at least see some translation as far as offensive value with Williams, as well as the rim protection. And Giles, his whole meal ticket was defense. Like, it was like, this guy can move in space. And that hasn't been there. So without any kind of greater sample, I think that you have to treat him as a backup big, even though the pedigree is going to like probably force somebody into drafting him, maybe even late lottery.
Yeah, and you never know when is the next knee surgery that actually makes the athleticism to go away, right? Like, it could be the last one. It could be the next one. Like, that's the problem. Like, you don't really know. We're not doctors. We don't have his like medical profile. Like, we don't know how much he can have like lost from the last one. Like, maybe he came back. He looked really good from like athleticism standpoint before, but like after losing another year and like another few months with Duke, like you don't know if he's able even to recover to full strength. Like, of course he's going to lose some, but you would like to think that being a young guy, he's going to be able to come back to a degree. But like, you don't even know if that's on the table for him. So I agree. I think you have to talk about him as a backup guy, but I think at least you have to talk about him as a backup guy that has a little bit of that ceiling or possibility to be a starter down the road if that comes back. Like, I think he has that on the back as a, maybe, I don't know how big of a chance you would put, like 25%, 30%, 40%, but at least he has that. Whereas with a guy like Ivan Rapp, you can't really see that happening, right? Like, that's my issue with him. Like, I like him a lot last year. I was one of the biggest defenders of him. And it was most because I was projecting the skills. Like, I thought his jumper looked okay. I think he had a good touch. He has super good hands. He's really good on the boards as well. And he's a really good passer. Like, he can pass out of the post. I think he can make some pass even facing up. But like, he's not that, like, have not evolved as a jump shooter that much. Like, he takes forever to get into his jump motion. He has like a super high release, which is good because he gets like a out of arc there. But like, he's just like, takes a long time. And he's not a guy that's even setting for, like, he's setting down for mid range shots a lot. And California could really use floor spacing there. So it's just like a difficult venue for him. I like him as a backup. I like him as your third big. So I think there is value for him because he can play. Like, he can play. He can make passes. He can read the floor. He's a basketball player. Like, he's a guy that is going to be useful in some capacity. But this is at one point that upside is good enough. So you draft him ahead of other guys like we've been talking about.
Yeah, I just, like, with me, I he's the classic tweener, right? He's the 4-5 tweener. Yeah. Like, he doesn't really have a clean position. And like, I don't see any avenue for him to really become a starter.
I think it's the clean position is a back of five. Right? You have to call it that way.
I agree. I think that's what he is. And that's what you usually sort people who you don't know what the hell to do with. And that's him. I mean, he doesn't have the legitimate range or like the handle to be a four, and he can't protect the rim, and he can't anchor your defense as a five, even though he's a really good rebounder. I agree. I think I like him as a third big with not a lot of upside. They can just come in and give you, you know, 12 to 15 quality minutes. He's going to play hard. He's got a good motor. He's going to rebound. If he gives you anything offensively, that's good. But he just doesn't have the vertical pop, and the skill set just isn't there for him to be any more than that, which is kind of how I feel about Bam Adebayo in like a different sense. Obviously, he's more physically developed. And that's another thing with Rab is like, he's not super strong. He's not like physical. Bam has that, but like his rim protection instincts are bad. And offensively, he's really just an explosive dive man. So what do you really do with that?
I think the thing with Bam, like, he could be a better starting profile guy if you actually have the surrounding talent around him to be able to just be a pure specialist, like, in a way, like Tristan Thompson does for Cleveland, even if Bam is less of an athlete, I would say, in terms of popping. But, like, I would say, like, he has a worse way to be a quality big in terms of bench play than Rapp, because Rapp, the thing with Rapp is, like, I think he can play. Like, he can play offensively, he can do some things, he can pass. Like, he's not, like, a guy that is going to be a total nonsense on offense. Like, he can move the ball. He's not going to be like a guy that just makes mistakes. And I think with Bam, if you play him as a bench player, you can run into a career like E.J. Hickson's. Like, he's just a rebounding guy that can run the floor, and that's all he does. And that could be good enough for a starting. I read this argument from other people that could be good enough for starting for some teams that just need that from the center spot. And I'm not really that worried about like rim protecting, because like, even if Tristan Thompson doesn't protect the rim, you have LeBron coming back from the perimeter. You even can have Samper doing that at times. And you have guys that can cover up for him. Like, if he can switch enough, and I think he can be a good guy for that role. It's just, I don't see much of an upside for him as a bench five. And that's why I'm not even that high on him. Unless you have a super specific team building situation where you can use him as a some type of like six starter, kind of like a guy that is a starter, but even you are much better if you go small. Like, that's fine, but if not, I don't see much of an upside with him, even if as a backup, you know, like, just because he doesn't warrant all that gravity. Even if he can finish all around the rim, he's not all that explosive, he's not all that long. So it's just a little bit more about that with him. Like, I'm a bit more dubious about his upside.
Yeah, I really like that point. As far as like, for bench bigs, for me, that's a role I like a Nikola Vucevic in, when he can come in for like 15 minutes and he can do a bunch of things on offense. He can score, because I like those, like, you know, if you're not going to defend the perimeter that well, I know that Bam can, but if you're not going to defend the perimeter that well,
a little bit,
and if you're not going to like protect the rim that well, like, at least come in like an Enes Kanter even situationally and just pulverize teams offensively and like up your usage and just reduce your overall minutes total. But for Bam, like, if he's going to be your bench backup five, like, really, he's just going to come in, he's going to defend a little bit in spurts on the perimeter, and he's going to rebound and maybe just be like a bucket getter, like, as far as putbacks and stuff like that. He's not going to have any kind of offensive like value at all. So I agree. I think that Rab for like a third big makes a lot more sense, because he's more skilled.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can maximize his minutes more.
I mean, there is a better path for Bam to be a starter in some situation. That's the only difference for them. Like, if you are actually considering that as a possibility, I will guess that you can be higher on Bam. But like, if you are not seeing that, or you are like, you are drafting him for a middling team that doesn't have the type of super star guy on the perimeter that can make life easier for everybody, I think if you are talking about third big, you should be a bit higher on Rab. And if you want to talk a little bit deeper on two or three guys more, we can do it. I don't know how you are doing with time.
Let's do it.
We should wrap it up. I don't know. Like, I think another like three more guys that we could put here as kind of that type of like cut up between positions. Like, there are Jonathan Motley from Baylor, Caleb Swanigan from Purdue, and John Collins from Wake Forest. A bit quick on all of them. Like, Motley is like kind of like this super long guy that you could talk yourself into being a five at times. Like, he does play for Baylor as a five sometimes and play more in the past. Like, now they have, I don't even know how to pronounce it, Aquil, like Joel Lual Aquil or whatever that's the name is. Like, they have him as the five, so he doesn't play all that much there. But like with Motley, I think he shows a little bit more of upside in terms of like being able to make some plays than Bam. And if you think he's going to be able to play some a small ball five, I think he's a better bench big as well than Bam. I think he's more useful there. I think he has a better path towards being a bit of a stretching big, even if he's not there yet. And I like him quite a bit as a bench player. I'm just not seeing the upside much more than that. But as a bench guy, you are drafting him in the second somewhere. I think that's a good pick for his quality.
His skill, yeah. If you play him as a backup five, I think he can do enough. He can put the ball on the floor a little bit. He can shoot a little bit. It's just like, with him, he's skilled in the post, and he gets doubled basically every time he gets the ball down there. Like, you watch him play Kansas and stuff, they always double him on the catch. But really, like, he's just not that explosive around the rim. And that's like his biggest thing, is like, he has some length to compensate for that. But I don't know how he's going to, like...
A lot of length, yeah.
He definitely has a lot of length, but it's just, can he really finish effectively?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're playing him as the five, and he can face up a little bit and develop that, and, like, blow by guys that are slower than him, maybe he can get there just because of the length. So that's the upside there for him.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah, like, that's where you're going to go down to. And I think Bam is going to get drafted much higher than him as well. Like, it's a similar thing we were talking about with Leaf and Lydon. I don't know what you think about that, but I think that's probably the case, especially with like being Kentucky guy and all that.
Well, yeah, and valuation, like we talked about, how to value draft spots. I'd rather take Motley. Maybe he's there early round two. That's a great...
In the 40s, maybe. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and like that's a backup five. You can find those guys, like we've talked about. Like, if that's what you want, I wouldn't invest high capital in it.
Yeah, and like, Swanigan, I think, is a guy that you can actually put against Rab a little bit. Like, they don't look alike at all physically. Like, it's not like they have the same type of profile, but like, I think if Rab could shot a bit more, or could like have that mechanics that Caleb Swanigan has, like Swanigan last year surprised me a lot. Like, I watched him a bit in high school, and when I watched him Purdue games, like, he looked even like a wing physically. Like, he was kind of slimmer than I thought. He was quicker with his release than I thought. Like, he has a good touch on his jumper. Like, I think he can face that a little bit. It's just like the problem with him is like, he's not going to be anything on defense other than a rebounder if you play him at the five, and he has no way of being able to play the four even with his jump shooting. So it's just basically a guy that can do rebounding for you from the bench, a guy that can stretch the floor a little bit against some fives, and he's not going to be able to do much on defense, and he's just going to be there for offensive purposes, I think, like at least making you live okay on the boards.
Yeah, and he like Purdue ran him off like a pin down screen for a three. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah,
like he's huge. He's got good shooting touch, got good natural touch. As a situational big, I wouldn't hate it. I'd have him maybe round two. But like, he's so limited in his versatility as far as who he can guard. He's not going to be able to guard anybody. But like, if you trust the shooting, I could see taking a flyer on him. But tell me a little bit about Collins, because I haven't seen a lot of Wake Forest.
I haven't seen a ton. I've seen a couple games lately. And like, the thing with him is just, I'm not a big fan of the archetype itself. Like, he lives in the mid post. He lives like there in the half court there all the time. Like, he can do a bunch of things offensively. He can like even, like the jumpsuit looks okay. I think he can develop and stretch it out. He's really young for being a sophomore and his offensive numbers are tremendous. It's just like, I don't see much in terms of like even doing more than that offensively. Like, he's not a passer. He doesn't even look to pass. I know Wake Forest is not the most talented team in the world, but they have Brian Crawford on the perimeter. He's a good shooter. Like, they could run some actions there for them. Like, I think he's okay offensively, but he's a guy that is just bringing that. Like, he's not bringing much on the other end as well. And he's just like, he's not a passer at all. Like, I think Swanigan can do a bit more there. I think Swanigan can be a bit more even defending the post because he has that natural strength on the lower body. Like, Collins is just a twig. Like, he's not that strong either. Like, he's like, what, 230 pounds? And he's like completely caught up between positions. Like, he looks like, to me, like a old school four, but he's going to be able, like, he's going to have to play the five because the jumper is not there yet. And even if he gets the jumper, like we talk about with Laurie, like, the jumper is going to be much more useful if he can play the five. So just, if you can live with a guy that is basically going to kill you from the, like, at least he can do, at least I think he can post up wings. Like, if you put him against a wing or you switch a wing on him and he gets that, I think he can get a bucket there, which is like a completely specialist role for him, like just a scorer, pure scorer big. And we have so many of those that actually bring more versatility to their games and actually bring some passing. Like, even with Kanter, you can see, and that's why before he broke his hand in the most stupid fashion ever, like, that's why actually OKC could run some offense through him in the second unit, because he has improved as a passer a little bit. Like, with Collins, like, he's a non-passer right now. Like, he's just not there at all. Like, he has 13 assists for 55 turnovers, something like that. Like, he's just not there. Like, he's not even looking for passing when he gets the ball.
Yeah, I haven't seen a ton of him, but he just seems like a good college player, and he's not going to translate as well. I think that there's a lot of factors, like you mentioned. If he could pass, you'd have something there potentially. If he could stretch consistently, you'd have something there. But just, I think right now, he's a college player, so...
I think he will stay probably put at Wake Forest another year. Like, I can't see how he gets, like, even if he declares and tries to get, like, test the waters and all that, I can't see how he has, like, a good enough report back from the NBA. Like, I know some people are putting him in the top 20 somehow, or even first. Like, I can't justify that. Like, I don't see a venue for him to be able to warrant that type of value. So I will guess that he probably will come back. But just, like, so many people are having him so high. So just, I thought we should touch on him a little bit, probably watch more tape later on and get a cleaner look. But just like, archetype wise, I just don't see it. Like, it's just difficult for me to project that well.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on all that. Let's wrap up quickly talking about just your general trade deadline thoughts.
Oh, well, I was happy as a I'm a Mavs fan. I mean, I like the Knicks as well. My dad was a little bit like related to New York in somehow. He almost went there to his PhD and he had some visits earlier on. So I kind of got that from him. But just like, mainly for the Mavs, I think the Nerlens Noel trade was fantastic. Like, it's just, I was quite kind of worried earlier on, and you could see that in my Twitter, like, just completely going nuts about the protection of the pick. Like, it was top 18 this year, but then it went down to being like just top 5 or something like that, because I think the Mavs would probably get a couple of lottery picks at least down the road. But like, since it was just turning into 2 second rounders, like, that just is unreal value. And for Philadelphia, like, I know people are going to be mad, but like, if you're getting a wing player that could have some type of upside, I don't really see it with Anderson, like, he's not disciplined enough, but like, if he gets there somehow, like, at least you're getting a wing for a big. Like, that's the best argument I have for the trade for them, like, because other than that, it's just like selling low on a guy that I would just prefer to match upon, because you have enough cap space to just justify that and even play him as a backup. So you have to talk yourself into, at least you got a wing for a big, and no one does that these days.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only selling point for this, is really they got a wing for a big, but the only problem is the big is actually like a legitimate starter. Like, he has like defensive player of the year upside, and the wing, I'm just not sold on at all. I just don't think, outside of like being hyper, like, physical, he's a really tough guy, great frame. I just don't see the skill level there. And like you said, I don't see the discipline, but like, Nerlens is going to destroy in that spread pick and roll system. I mean, it's going to be, that's just carbon copy made for that guy, like, positioned next to Dirk. Just gives him, just compensates for all Dirk's weaknesses, And it was just a great trade by the Mavs. Like, moving forward, like, that's a very, very nice scheme fit. I also really liked what Toronto did. I thought that Toronto, like, for what they did, what they invested, they got great return. Like, I don't want to, like, trade a lottery pick for, like, Serge Ibaka. We don't know how old he is. We don't know, like, what he's going to demand contract-wise. Like, he's eligible to start, I think, like, $30.6 million. That's his max. I don't think he's going to get that. But, like, what they've done to their roster, they have one of the most enjoyable rosters in the league because it's so versatile. They can do so many different things. And the fact that they got him without giving up Powell and then was able to get PJ Tucker for two late second rounders, that's just fantastic work by Masai Ujiri.
Yeah, I don't like Tucker that much as a three anymore. Like, I think he's more
useful. Oh, he's a four. Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, the thing is, like, Toronto has five perimeter players that can play on the playoffs, and you don't really need more than that. Like, they're okay with five guys rotating all the minutes there. So you can just play Tucker at the four and just have, like, Patterson and Ibaka and him as your main bigs and have Valanciunas more as a specialist in the playoffs. Like, just, that's an ideal situation for them this year. Down the road, they're going to have to make difficult decisions with the cap and all that, but, like, at least they didn't submit a lot of, like, long-term assets that can calm them down on the future. So just, like, for the value they gave up, it's completely fantastic, especially because they hold their hand tight. They didn't overpay for Tucker because they were a bit, like, afraid of anybody giving up a first. They stayed tied there, and they had their value right, and they just give 2 seconds up. That's fantastic. I think that was really impressive by Ujiri. And I think another trade that was interesting was the OKC one for McDermott. I think, like, of course, Thad Gibson was more like a throw-in in this trade. Like, they didn't even really get value back. I'm talking about the Bulls.
Yeah.
But, like, for OKC, I understand the point. Like, Payne could be useful for, like, 12 minutes a game. But if you are just going to run Russ system all the time, like, you can just pay Oladipo as your secondary ball handler, or sometimes as a main one against Bengtsson sometimes, or even just pick up a wing, a guard for the D-League and play him those 12 minutes, and you just get another shooter to be able to unlock that Westbrook and Adams pick and roll, because you were having a lot of issues offensively not being able to do all that. And I think McDermott in this system, even if down the road and long term they go to a more open lineup where they don't play two bigs and they play like Robertson at the four sometimes if they resign him, and even move on from Kanter and play Sabonis as your backup big. Like, I think if they go to that path, it's going to be difficult cap-wise and all that. That could be a much better team that they have now. And I think McDermott could do much better if they actually feature him in a sizable role and a bigger role in a more spread system.
Yeah, I thought from the Bulls aspect, I thought it was kind of interesting. I mean, obviously, they really like campaign a lot, which is weird because I really like when their offense really hums, it's Jimmy Butler as the primary initiator.
Yeah, that's the thing, yeah.
And if he's going to be initiating the offense, why would you have like a small campaign out there? You know what I mean? I'd rather just play Denzel Valentine, who's a better spot-up shooter. And like he obviously has the size to at least do some things defensively. He's not like super fast, of course, but like they were so invested. They're so invested in getting that point guard. They have like four on their roster that they're trying to like become like the next starting caliber guy. I just don't see it for any of them.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like the thing for me is like I like campaign. I like him back in his draft as well. Like I think he was good enough to be a late pick. Like he was. Like I was okay with that. It's just like the offensive skills for him are going to be with him on the ball and him making decisions. Like you're not going to get that with Jimmy Butler. Not go for big Dwayne Wade if he continues. Like it just makes no sense. You just get that stopgap guy that can defend and can shoot. Like the thing with Jerian Grant, he can shoot, but like at least he can defend and play off ball. Like it's just you're not getting any of that from campaign. Like I think campaign could be okay as a backup guy that can run the second unit offense there. But like you already have Wade to do that sometimes as well. Like it's just I don't see the fit unless they move Butler down the road on the summer. Like maybe they are planning on doing that and that's why they're just moving ahead now and just getting that guy for next year. But just I think they overpaid a little bit for that, especially because it's not like campaign's stock was on the rise. Like this is part of it. Like you have to value you can get the guy on the cheap later on. Like you just there was not much of a way for OKC to play him more. So yeah. I don't really know. I don't see it unless, like I said, like they're going to feature him on a bigger role.
Yeah, we got to get out of here by mentioning we got to talk about Boogie Cousins trade really quick, just because we haven't gotten a chance to do that. What the hell is basically what I have to say. I kind of get the devaluation of bigs, but when you have like an actual legit difference maker, like I mean, Buddy Hield in the first round pick, and when you're getting Omri Caspi, I know he's out for the year now, but like he could have been like the second best player in that trade. So I don't know. I think the Kings panicked. And apparently, like, New Orleans was offering a 2009 first in conjunction with that, but then they took it off the table. And that's the deal. The deal that Vlade Divac was talking about. He had a better deal. So it's just, like, the whole thing is just a complete train wreck. And I know, like, the Kings' bigs played really well, like, since. Like, Willie Cauley-Stein had a huge night this first night with that Boogie. Scala Bissier actually showed some kind of effort level and like consistent like skill, but it's been like two games. Let's calm down.
Yeah, we're not going to go too deep onto Willie or Scott or any of those guys. Like, we could do a prospect calibration later on, but like for me, the thing, like, I'm going to defend Vlade a little bit because I think he doesn't, like, at least he doesn't get the proper rep in terms of like how hard of a time he has expressing himself sometimes. Like, I have that as well coming from a second language in terms of English, but like, I think he was trying to make the case that the agency from Boogie kind of killed that trade when they make those comments about like, he's not going to resign, he's not going to extend with anything, which is likely the case because he was just losing money if he does that this summer. So that's normal to do. And they were just pressing for him to be able to stay in Sacramento and get that massive designated veteran player extension. So like, I don't understand why Vlade was that upset. Like, it's just naivety from him to like be surprised about agents doing that for clients. It's like they couldn't get at least another first for him just because of that. And I understand like that was part of leverage for New Orleans to drop that from the table just because the agents were there and they could put that as an excuse. It's just like, if I'm Sacramento, like, I understand that that could be the biggest offer. And if you go down the teams, that could be actually the case. It's just like, don't move him from that. Like, you stand pat and wait and try to get a better hand on the summer. It's just like, there's not that much of an issue there if you just wait. Like, I know you could offer that extension and he can demand that and pressure you and all that, but like, you can still move him for whatever you got that now on the draft at least. And you might have like a bit more of certainty about the pick because like right now, what happens is the Pelicans end up in the top three. Like, it's just like, you are not getting nada this year. Like, you just, I think they could at least wait to the draft to make this move. And it's not like Cassius was going completely to play them out of the top 10 protection that they have on their own pick. Like, that's my main criticism there.
Yeah, we talk about the devaluation of bigs again, but like, don't trade good ones for nothing. Just keep them. That might be the takeaway here is like, if you have a New Orleans, if you have a Boogie Cousins, they're going to be more valuable to you because the market doesn't value them as highly. So keep them and just have them in a role. Like you said, the Sixers had a boatload of cap space. Would you rather use it on Nerlens Noel or like Henderson and Ilyasova combined? Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's like, there's no question. But
I think like, just on a final point, like, I think it's going to be quite interesting to see the Pelicans and how this goes, because like, I remember an article, I think it was from Charks, and it was like maybe a year and a year and a half ago, don't hold me on tweet, but like, I think he was talking about like how you can actually play big if you can play a skill. And I'm not saying that this is the ideal pairing, because like, I'm not sure about how much you can switch Boogie Cousins and how much he can defend from the five spot. But like, I think at least with AD, he could play some four defensively and be okay if he has enough of a backup plan and like a recovery plan there. So I think it's going to be an interesting experiment to be able to see if those type of players are actually playable together or not. Because I think in his piece, Charks, I'm not really 100% solid on this, but I think he was alluring to like the possibility of like, where did you get Karl Anthony Towns and Porzingis in the same team? Like, that could be a pairing that works, even if they are too big. It's just because they can play a skill, they can actually defend a little bit on space. I think with Porzingis, we have seen that he's a bit more of a problem than he was maybe when Charles was writing about this. But like, I think he's going to be quite intriguing just because of that.
It really is an interesting test case for sure. It's just, unfortunately, I'm not sure if New Orleans has the infrastructure outside of those two. Like, they're going to have to max out probably Jrue Holiday this offseason. And he's a great player, but like, you can't just have like two non-entities on wings. I like each one more, but more as a backup. And they just don't really have that consistent floor spacing. So yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how it goes. Do you have anything to plug? Or
no, not really. Like, just follow me on Pesquer J. I think that's how you spell it: PESQUERJ. And just like, follow me up for updates on this and updates on trade line, updates on college players as well. Like, we are there all the time making arguments and funny discussions everywhere in Twitter. So just get there. I don't know if you got. Did you get any article later on coming or just this week?
I'm probably going to write another prospect calibration. I'm not sure what I'm going to yet.
Those are good.
I did a bunch of trade deadline stuff, but that's pretty out of date now, obviously, after the trade deadline. But follow me on Twitter at Cole Zwicker. Please give us a review on iTunes if you get a chance. Give us a rating. That really helps. And you can reach out to us at What's On Draft Pod or tweet us at What's On Draft Pod on Twitter.
Yeah,
and we'll answer questions.
Send all your questions for that, because we are probably going to get another mailbag later on this month, probably on March and all that. So just like with March Madness, it's just good to have those questions coming. And just check all you can from the Almighty Border Network. Like, we have Sam Derenthal doing the O2Olden podcast, another NBA draft one. It's pretty great. Like, they have had several nice guests, even our very own Don Yates, just in the last chapter, I think. So just give Son a like and give Son 5 stars as well, even if he's competent. Like, I think it's good to have a really developed relationship between both of us there.
Perfect, man. Yeah, we've already gone way over because this big class, we went in depth on pretty much everybody. So we'll get out of here now, and thanks for listening, guys.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.